Michel Deschamps is a researcher investigator in Sudbury, Ontario, which is a few hours' drive north of Toronto. He spent years sifting through newspapers looking for UFO-related reports covering northern Ontario, and he's posted the results of that research to his newish website, newfors.com, the Northern Ontario UFO Research and Study website. The site actually has a staggering amount of northern Ontario-related UFO activity and a whole bunch of other UFO information. And one of the most intriguing cases that's happened in Michel's area, other than Michel's own many sightings, which we may or may not get into, was the Falconbridge case. At Michel's website is an excerpt from the 1979 book UFO Canada by Yurko Bunderchuk, and it says, Falconbridge Canadian Forces Radar Station, Sudbury, Ontario, November the 11th, 1975. One of the longest and most controversial UFO sightings ever recorded by radar personnel happened in the Sudbury area in northern Ontario. The appearance of unidentified craft on November 11th in 75 prompted NORAD officials to send military jet interceptors to investigate. And despite denials, this move clearly exposed the government's interest in exploring the phenomenon. The Sudbury sightings coincided with an unprecedented week-long flurry of UFO activity over key military installations in both Canada and the United States. Let's bring Michel into this. On the line from his home in Sudbury is Michel Deschamps. Bonjour for sure, Michel.
Salut, Errol.
An intriguing, as I said, the Falconbridge radar station case. And you actually weren't involved in the original investigation of the case, but you became intrigued as you came across stories of it in the local papers over the years.
As a matter of fact, I vaguely remember 75. I was in grade school, and although I don't personally remember it, some of the other residents in Hanmer actually heard the sirens that went off from the radar base on that particular day. And I said, wow, like an alert siren? And I don't remember hearing that. But when I first got word of all these clippings in the Sudbury Star, I started looking, and of course I started back in June of 47. And when I came up to the 70s, not only did I find some clippings about the radar base, but there was also sightings that led up to the month of November, starting in August of 75, in Shiguindo on Manitoulin Island. Sightings there, also a sighting over Lake Ramsey. Manitoulin UFO sighted a 10th time. Police see light. The police officers in North Bay saw a light. So I have a clipping on November 3rd, 1975. Two UFO sightings over Lake Nipissing Island leave OPP civilian observers baffled. And as we get closer to, of course, today, which is the anniversary, November 11th, radar-based police see UFO here. And headlines for the following day, November 12th, U.S. jets scrambled on UFOs. More sightings reported. Radar base won't comment.
Well, of course they won't comment.
No. Not at the time. And I never thought that I would ever hear from somebody who actually worked there. But basically, going through the clippings, in the early 90s, my former colleague Todd Frazier and I proceeded to inquire about some information regarding UFOs to the National Archives. And here we were, filling out regular Information Act requests. I guess when Todd made a call to the National Archives, he spoke to a lady there, and she says, well, didn't you know that there's microfilm reels are available? And so Todd turned to me and says, yeah, why the hell are we filling these out when you could just maybe buy these microfilm reels? So we went ahead and we bought them. At the time, there was only five that were available, 16-millimeter film, and each going for about $24. So we bought all five and proceeded to look through them from early 50s. And when we got to the 70s, we found 12 documents that pertained to the radar base. And it included names of corporals that saw the object, or were trained as radar technicians at the radar base. As a matter of fact, more recently I did get a chance to actually speak with a radar technician, and his name is in three of the documents.
Can you piece the event together for us?
Yeah, we're thinking now it's more like it was four objects in total, it seems like. The first people to report the sighting was our nursing staff at Pioneer Manor. That's a nursing home. Six nurses. It says in the documents they wish to remain anonymous. There was also additional witnesses, Sudbury Regional Police. They were on the follow-up report. They said basically the object seemed to hover over Sudbury Stadium. I remember that baseball park. Constable Keebles and Whiteside. Whiteside actually was a friend of Don Campbell, UFO Don. So, of course, the police officers would more likely have told them about these sightings, too. Here's a Constable Marsh, Sudbury Regional Police again, was on patrol near Highway 17 East. He was observing it southeast of Coniston. One very bright star-like object moving in a jerky circular manner. When covered with clouds, it was still bright enough to shine through as well as light up an area around it. While observing this object, he saw two other similar objects, one in the south and one southwest of Coniston. All seemed to be moving in a jerky circular manner. And they also seemed to emit a pulsating type of light varying in colors, easily distinguishable from the stars. Here we have Master Corporal Kreutz and Corporal Lauritsen from CFS Falconbridge. Corporal Lauritsen is actually the radar technician that got a hold of me. It says here they looked at the object and it says, appeared to be a very bright stationary light at approximately 30,000 feet. Sighting lasted about 30 seconds, was first observed by Sudbury Police to be overhead Falconbridge, the town of Falconbridge. There's also a town of Falconbridge, but it's not exactly located to where the radar base is. The radar base is halfway between Hanmer and Sudbury. Between the radar base and Sudbury, there's the town of Falconbridge and the town of Garson. One bright object appeared to be over the north and of the city of Sudbury, moving in a northwesterly direction at a high rate of speed. And then it was seen for a minute, then covered by a large cloud. Again, November 11th. Circular object seen by Captain Carson, Master Corporal Kreutz, and Corporal Lauritsen. Circular object brilliantly lighted with two black spots in the center, moving upwards at high speed from 42,000 feet to 72,000 feet. No horizontal movement. This object was sighted visually and by radar, bearing 210 degrees magnetic, at 30 nautical miles from CFS Falconbridge. Major Oliver took pictures, but is not sure if they will turn out. A similar object was sighted by the same observers, bearing 270 degrees, magnetic, but at too great a distance to provide details. Many other reports were received from Sudbury, Ontario Provincial Police.
The photographs that were taken,
yeah.
Did they turn out?
We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know. I don't think they were ever released.
Having read the information on Falconbridge at your website,
yeah.
It seems to me that there had been announcements of the fact that the photographs were taken.
Yeah.
At least according to Yurko Bunderchuk.
Yeah. You got two stories. You got the stories from the documents and Yurko Bunderchuk, and you got the other story put up by the Sudbury Star. Well, the Sudbury Star had been told that some photos were being released, so they showed up the next day to see. It almost sounds like what happened with Roswell. The one day the story came out, the next day everything was denied. Well, the same thing with this case. As the reporters had been told that photos were going to be released, they had shown up at a certain spot, and then it was basically denied that any photos were ever taken, much less ever came out or turned out. Okay. So the story is varied in the newspaper compared to what it says in the documents. In the papers, it basically made it look like the sightings were very vague. But when you got the document talking about an object that had the surface texture of the moon, craters and dimples, spherical shaped and appeared to be rotating, ascending and descending, the sighting lasted 2 hours intermittently due to cloud cover, and it was observed on height finder radar and search radar, so two different types of radar. In the Sudbury Star, well, it didn't quite go into detail, so Corporal Lauritsen was telling me that that's the discrepancy he wanted to straighten out. The papers seem to indicate that the same thing they picked up on radar was what was being seen by the cops and the nurses. But those objects were particularly too low for the radar to pick up. It would have been lost in the ground clutter. Mm-hmm. Because apparently they can pick up ground clutter like buildings, trees, and hills, like below 10,000 feet.
And they don't usually set the radar up so that it scans at below 10,000 feet.
But this object was further out than these other ones. His master corporal that had the binoculars, he was a trained observer. He was a pilot. And so he noticed the texture on the craft, but Corporal Ortson said that he couldn't make out the details, but he's trained as a radar technician. He's not trained to be a trained observer through binoculars. And so that's where the discrepancy is between the papers. If they've said a different story about there's pictures released, said there was no pictures taken, and yet in the documents it mentions right there that pictures were taken.
I wonder where Bondarchuk got his information from, because in his book, UFOs Over Canada, and you had the excerpt at your website, he says the objects were photographed by the base staff. And then later that afternoon, Sudbury Star reporters were advised by the Public Information Office, the PIO, at Defense Headquarters in Ottawa, that the photos would soon be released to the press.
Yeah.
And then that was corroborated by Falconbridge radar station personnel, Bondarchuk says, who indicated that the developed prints would be available the following morning. And then when the station's base commander, Major Oliver, made a surprise announcement, he said there have been no photographs taken nor any messages sent to Ottawa that mention photographs. He said he had investigated and had found no one had grabbed a camera. As you say, it's like Roswell. Here's the debris that we actually found.
You know what? I never even thought about that. It's just, where did Yurko Bondarchuk, who is a source of information. Obviously, he got some really good information for his book.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody was asking me, as a matter of fact, regarding my website, where did you get all those sketches from? Well, I have Yurko Bondarchuk's book both in English and French. And in the French book, it had all these sketches, including sketches of one of the objects seen over the radar base. And they also had a photograph of an F-106 interceptor from the Air National Guard, which was Selfridge, Michigan, that they were sent from.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the photo of Major Oliver was in the book, too.
Yurko Bondarchuk has, over the years, disappeared. He was a prof at McGill University at the time the book came out, and nobody seems to know where he is now.
Well, I don't know for sure if there was any subsequent sightings that took place after 75 that were not even witnessed by myself. But whether there were, I wouldn't be surprised until the base closed in 1986 and 87. The reason I know this is because living close to the base, 4.5 miles away, we snuck up there a couple of times once the place was abandoned. It was pretty cool. In one documentary, as a matter of fact, we were talking about not just Falconbridge, but the same time that Falconbridge was happening, there was also intrusions of UFOs or mysterious helicopters over Loring Air Force Base in Maine, Wordsmith Air Force Base in Michigan, Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana, and Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota. But I never thought that I'd see something at the base. I mean, once it was closed in October of 1990, that's the very same year that I met Don Campbell that very summer. He had lent me some old Flying Saucer magazines, and he wasn't really willing to give them to me, so I said, well, I've got to make photocopies. But I was working at a car dealership at the time. I was finishing doing the photocopies. I was there from 8 o'clock to 8:30. And as I'm walking out, I see this object. And it, like, I thought at first it was Jupiter. Extremely bright and like lots of strings of light coming off of it. And I said, what the hell is that? So I walked back. I talked to one of the salespeople and I had him come and take a look. Well, he didn't even have to go outside. He just came up to the window and you could see the object. And he just looked at it, shrugged his shoulders, and walked off. So I said, well, I'm going to go and check to see what this is. So I get in the car, go down the hill, and as I'm looking to my right, between the houses, I could still see the object. Get to the house, and I'm all excited, and I say, Dad, I think there's a flying saucer flying in Sudbury. Grabbed my binoculars and went to the neighboring street. The trees were bare. I could see the object, and by then it looked like a little white egg. There was no more dissipating light coming off of it. And it went from side to side. I stood there, and sometimes eyes can play tricks on you, but I swear that this thing just moved a little bit to the left and right about 3 times and it stopped. And then it blinks out. And then I'm freaking out because I said, that must have moved. There's a branch in the way. So I crouch a little lower and it's not there. And then a few seconds later, it reappears, but at a lower elevation than it was, but it was still over the hills in the distance. I knew that. I said, I got to go to a place where I can get another good view of the whole valley. So I went to a neighboring hill, and I had my binoculars with me. I'm just panning from west to east. And as I get to where the base is located, I see this big reddish-pinkish pulsating light, maybe 50, 60 feet off the top of the hill. Couldn't see the base. This was like 8:30, almost getting close to quarter to 9. But the lamppost along the highway, from that, I could tell where the base was. And this thing was there, and then the hairs the back of my neck stood up. My knees started to buckle, so I put my elbows on my rooftop to stabilize the binoculars, and I looked at this thing. I don't know, maybe 5 minutes. And it seemed like it was going to stay there. So I said, well, stupid me. I said, I got to get witnesses. I said, no witnesses was the one reason why a lot of people kick themselves when they had a sighting, is because they have nobody else to tell about. So I stupidly put all my blinkers on, my hazard lights, and I drove like an idiot back to the house to try to get somebody, and went back with my mom, and the object was gone. To tell you the truth, I've been kicking myself ever since.
Was this while the base was still open?
No, it was closed.
Ah.
It was closed. This was October 1990, and my personal assumption was that these guys were obviously at the time in 75, they must have known, just like our jet fighters are able to tell when they have a radar lock on them, they must have been able to tell that the radar was operating and tracking them. So I'm just assuming that they were just checking out why is the base no longer operating, because they hovered near there, like, real close. It was actually bigger than a car, because through the binoculars, it was exactly the same width as one of large cube building at the radar base. And later on, I took a couple of reporters from the south side story there. We proceeded to measure the building, one side and the other, and was 40 feet by 40 feet. So I'm assuming that the object that was hovering there that night was approximately the same size. I tried to call, of course, the only person I trust that would believe me would be UFO Don Campbell.
The local UFO investigator before you.
Well, actually, he was not a UFO investigator. He was a non-believer in the 50s when the Garson mine incident took place with the landing and the three 13-foot-tall beings. He used to laugh at the report in the papers. But then he went and investigated Garson, and he saw a military helicopter and a whole bunch of stuff. The audio clip's on my website, so people can actually listen to the story itself. But he was a non-believer then, but then he just became so intrigued with it. His work shift actually allowed him the time to go around when these things would show up, and they would show up mostly after midnight. And him and his partner, who believed him from the first time he had his first sighting, they'd go out and they'd see these things over Sudbury, like at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning when most people would be sleeping. But I met him that same summer, and so I thought, well, he's the only person who's going to believe me. So I tried calling him on my mom's phone, but there was static on the phone like you wouldn't believe. I couldn't call out. I couldn't figure out why. And so I had to drive to the Hanmer Tavern, just a small bar, and there was a payphone outside. I got on the payphone, no problem. Called him up, told him about the sighting. And then as I'm looking up in the sky, I see this small Cessna. And another assumption came into mind. I says, I wonder if that's what made the UFO blink itself out, to let the plane pass by. And then once the plane was gone, the UFO would blink itself on again, because I'd heard similar reports, including Malmstrom Air Force Base, where this 300-foot disc was over the missile silos. And a helicopter pilot and some jet fighters went over. The UFO blinked itself off. The jets went around in circles, said there's nothing here. They headed back to the base, and then the UFO turned itself on and then took off. So I thought, well, maybe this would happen. You know, in the time when I saw the little egg-shaped object disappear and I couldn't see it in view, and then it reappeared a little lower. It must have left the plane go by, because the airport's not being that far from the radar base. But anyways, I told the story to Don, and he believed me. And I was still, like, the hairs of the back of my neck was still raised, and that was my sighting at the base. After that, I stood out in fields over there by the radar base looking for UFOs, flashing flashlight. I almost flagged an airplane down. It was the only mistake I ever made. Then I knew that if you want to identify a UFO, you got to stay out there at least 30 minutes to an hour to make sure that once the plane passes over you, you can hear the sound, you can see the international beacon, you can see the red and blue lights on the wingtips, and recognize that as what for what it is. So, yeah, I learned quite a lot from that sighting.
Michel, all of that you've talked about, plus a whole bunch more stuff, is at your website.
Yeah.
and people can go read and they can go listen because there's all kinds of audio there too.
Yeah.
You have said there is much more to the story than what we've had time to talk about here. At least this will whet the listeners' interest, and we encourage them to go to your website, noufors.com. There'll be a link. If you go back to the program listing, there's a link there that will take you to Michel's website. Whether you speak English or French, it's in both languages there because Michel is French-Canadian.
Apparently, I'm told it's the only bilingual website of its kind outside of Quebec.
Mm. Michel, thank you, sir.
Oh, you're welcome, my friend.
And we'll talk again soon.
Yes, you take care.
Yeah, and you too.
Okay.
You better pray to the Lord when you see those flying saucers. It may be the coming of the judgment.